Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I am unashamed. What about you?
For now, we'll just eat like kings.
Eat like kings. I believe I am a king. I will give that study on a podcast in a podcast near you.
That's right.
But I'm digging.
One of the texts that you could use, which it is pretty enlightening, we are a royal priesthood.
Ooh, trust me. I've already circled the word.
I figured you would.
Royal. That Revelation 1:6 is what got my attention. He has made you to be kings. So,
that we were on the podcast that day. We were talking about the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. That's what kind of got it rolling for you.
But nobody thinks we're kings because it doesn't fit with the narrative. But they didn't think Jesus was a king either. He's like, "Are you a king? Ha ha!"
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah,
yeah." That's why I came.
I'm the King of Kings. He's like, "Well, let's kill you then." I mean, that's basically what they crucified him. Because of insanity. He's claiming to be a king.
Yeah.
Well, now, guess what? When I claim to be a king on earth, they do the same thing. They laugh and say, "Where's your can? Let me put some coins in it. Go buy something."
What was the
true story?
Then there used to be a King Tobacco? Was it King Albert?
That's a cigar.
Oh no,
it's King Oscar.
King Oscar. That's just
the king of fish.
But isn't there a tobacco with king in the title?
No, you're thinking about there's a cigar, I think, called a King something.
That's what I was thinking.
Not that I smoke cigars, but
I remembered the joke is calling the store and saying, "Do you have King Arthur in a can? You better let him out or something." I thought that just flashed into my brain.
But anyway, I'm working.
I'm sure one of our audience members will.
I'm working on a sermon about we are kings. When I Googled it, I found zero. Nobody thinks that you're a king in Christ, or they haven't taken it to the computer.
They haven't asked about it.
The only place there was, which was my point, which is the same deal. Y'all have heard my bit. I look at products who take spiritual principles and try to make money from that, even though they don't believe it. I have a list a mile long. I've told you about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Charmin Forever.
Yeah.
Toilet paper that never runs out, but it does. So,
especially during the coronavirus.
Well, yeah, we saw that. So that whole deal about the eternal role was a lie. So anyway, the only thing I saw about kings was humble kings and its clothing, its apparel, and they trademarked it because I wanted to write a book. I think I mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I said humble kings.
Yeah.
But nope, already trademarked. It's a clothing line. Now, what's a clothing line? And it was like clothes that are like hip, you know. And so somehow or another, you're a humble king. I don't get it. But it sounds good, and if you give them $40, they'll give you a shirt.
Yeah.
So yesterday I go over because I got a golf tournament next weekend and I haven't been playing much golf. So here's my deal on golf. I'm kind of past the point. Once I hit 50, I'm like, my body just won't turn like it used to. And with that comes the frustration of, you know, you see a professional golfer, like used to, I'd watch videos and I go try to do it. When I try to do that, I'm immediately injured. Just trying to make the motion. It's just my body.
That's your body preparing you for my age. Now it's 74.
Yeah.
It goes further down than it is now.
Well, if you want to go get into traction, just make a full turn. So
Dad's at the point where he reaches out to grab something quickly.
I reach for my falling shotgun.
And the bicep becomes a unicep.
And I did it quickly. It was falling. And to save anyone from getting hurt, my left hand was right here. My shotgun is on my right. I just went very rapidly and caught it. And when I did, I said, "Hey!" So I looked, and this is the result.
Oh,
Phil, that is so That's very hard for me to look at. I mean, I don't know why you keep showing it. Well, I feel.
Because when I see it myself, I said, that needs to be shown on what not to do. Let the shotgun fall, grab it with the other arm. But if somebody told me I would make a movement of less than 2 feet
yeah.
to grab something, and this would be the result. It turned purple, the blood up in there. Then it turned yellowish, green.
Yeah, I
mean, it's not color. Funny. Why?
Well, when you go do it 87 to 90 times on purpose with a club, and you're just making that motion.
I called a man who knew a doctor, and I said, Dan, take a shot of this and give it to this guy.
Called a man who knew a doctor.
So the guy looked at my muscle, what was left of it, and I said, get a hold of some doctor that does this kind of work and show him this picture and ask him what I need to do. So he calls him up, and the guy said, I can fix it in about 20 minutes. It's about 20 minutes worth of surgery.
But you haven't fixed it.
He said, however. He said, however. A lot of people who have that same injury, and I agree with them, they don't do anything. Is it if you're having any trouble with the strength in your left arm? I said, nope. He said,
it just looks funny.
He said, let it ride.
So now you
said it'll heal back together, what's left of it. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, instead of 2 steps, you got 1 step, bicep. Now that
and you have the perfect icebreaker for any gathering of people. Well, if you ever do start gathering with people.
If you get two more of those, you can go get in the circus.
So I didn't go to a local surgeon or nothing. I just looked at it, sent the picture in. Do you need to tie this back together, or what do you think?
You know, if I was a kid.
He said, let it ride. I said, let it ride.
I was a kid, this would be the perfect thing to do at show and tell. I would bring you up there, you would show it, and then tell the story. It'd be interesting.
It would be very interesting.
So yesterday, I'm practicing my chipping and pitching, because I don't really care if I win the tournament at this point, but I don't want to embarrass myself. That's the kind of golfer I am. I just don't. Because
multiple duffs are embarrassing.
Look, when you look like me and you go play at the establishment where everybody talks like this, you have to have your shirt tucked in 100% of the time. But when you look like I do, I stand out. And people are like, that must be that Dynasty guy. Well, then they're watching every swing.
Or who let him in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, they either they know who you are or they find out quickly. And so So I'm at that stage. So Willie has his own little golf course. You know, the Lord has blessed him mightily. And he basically made a synthetic golf course, which is pretty cool.
It's really cool.
And so I was over there practicing, and I'm like 20 minutes in. I'm just kind of chipping around, you know. And here I hear a side-by-side, you know, four-wheeler come out there on his – what'd you call it? His estate. Because it goes, I mean, he's got a pond just stuffed with
stock full of crappie and 12-pound Florida bass.
Everything you can like imagine to do with some property in town, he's done it. And so, which I've caught all the crappie, so I told him, you know, let's buy some more. I'll split it with you since I caught them all.
Because you can't do the ones that reproduce because then they don't get big. So you have to.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
Who knows? So anyway, here comes this guy. And I'm like, well, it must be nice. You know, I mean, Willie's got another worker because he's got a lot of people that's all the time working out there.
Hell yeah.
And this guy.
Always a project.
Yeah. He pulled up. It's kind of an awkward moment. I kind of nodded, you know, but he didn't nod. And, he started picking up limbs. I started walking over there because I thought, who is this, you know? And so I was like, boy, it must be nice. I mean, Willie, he's hiring people just to ride around his property and pick up sticks. Yeah. And so about, I guess, 10 minutes went on. I'd practicing, picking up sticks, and I hit a ball over there, almost hit him. You know, I hit a shank.
That's been said. That's one you're trying to correct.
Why do you holler when that happens?
Four. But I just I hit it and it was too late. He was too close to me. So I'll go there close and I'm like, it hit me. I thought, I know who this is. It's Willie. I said, Willie? And he went, yeah. I said, I did not recognize you.
I didn't either.
He cut all his hair off.
I didn't recognize him either.
He didn't say, Dad, he said, he told me he came in, he sat down, he didn't say anything. He was going to get Dad's reaction, and Dad looked over. Willie's sitting on the couch. Dad's watching Fox, and Dad looks over, and he gave him the nod, which is
I don't know you,
I don't know
but
you.
Welcome.
He sat down. I said, I wonder who this dude is. And then he came out like he owned the joint.
I thought
he was Gary Glenn Osborne.
Willie said there was like this awkward pause, and Willie was just waiting. And then Dad said, What you got going on? You know, waited till he engaged him. So Willie started talking, and then Dad's like, Will, is that you?
I had the same problem. I was like, well, why were you so brief? Why did you not say anything? And he's like, well, I didn't know we had to, you know, exchange pleasantries or whatever when you're in my
really
yard.
It changed the way he looked a lot.
Yeah, but it was kind of weird because I was like, well, you need to be more friendly. I mean, this guy, it was way more awkward than it should have been because I was like, who is this hand, right? And what's he doing on one of Willie's new four-wheelers is what I thought because I had never seen that wheeler. So yeah, I was like, this guy brought his own wheeler? I mean, he's picking up sticks. Nope, it's Willie with a haircut.
Well, I guess, but you knew he had a haircut.
I did not recognize. I did. I saw a picture, but
I knew he had a haircut from the social media. But then I go over to his house, but I mean, it still looked like him. I mean, it did look different.
I had no idea it was him. Yeah. None for 10 minutes. Right. I got over there close, and I just something about his mannerisms. I thought, is that Willie? I guess he's lost a little weight too.
He lost
30 pounds worth of hair, but
plus he took his beard. I told him it looks like a garden gnome. Like it drew down to like a little point. Now it's a odd looking beard, but he's got the short hair.
I wouldn't recommend that. I mean, I know he went from one extreme to whatever he is now, but he's unrecognizable. But
well, he told me after you shaved your beard that one thing he'll never do is shave it off because he's like, you know, a lot happens under there from 40 to 50.
I'm going to have to agree with that. I mean, I just felt really lonely and afraid. It was a scary feeling. You know?
Could you imagine shaving yours off, Dad, at this point, if you just peeled it off?
It's a good question.
I'd give you $100.
Somebody said, well, why did you grow whiskers? And I usually say it's just doing that on its own.
I agree with that assessment.
Do you remember
with a male, hair comes out of their faces, not so much with females. It's just a fact. So I'm looking at it thinking, surely being a man that thinks God created the heavens and the earth and made us from the dust of the earth, the male has hair come facial hair, and the female does not. There's a few males, Indians types, tribes, that they don't have any hair on their face. I said, but if he put it there, surely he didn't put it there to be cut off every day.
Well, if you live in the wilderness, you would never. I get it. You live in the wilderness.
Oh, you have to have it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, people don't realize.
It will save your life, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. Well, especially if you were up north in the tundra.
Well, Louisiana, you know, there's so many insects. I mean, forget the snakes and alligators. The
this
things people are.
Many a wasp.
Oh, I'm with you 100%. I've had more critters get hung up in this and that it didn't sting me or bite me.
Me too.
And I'm like. Oh.
But that may be where that earwig was hiding out till he went up in the ear too. You never know.
He may have been low-ridden down the beard.
I've
knocked black widow spiders, just feel something, you know, on your neck. And then you just hit him. And when he hits the ground,
if he got up in there, that'd have been bad.
Oh, my goodness, a black widow, and then I stomp him. But, I mean, I'm just saying.
Of course you do.
But their whiskers
I've had the same
saved
thing.
Me.
No, you can't, like, people, because I've had people ask me, like, if I have fleas. And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, how would you know? I was like, because I would feel them crawling on my skin.
Because you'd be scratching them like a dog.
Well, right.
What's interesting about a beard is there's no doubt it's cooler in the summer. And it's warmer in the winter. So God in his wisdom gave you a facial covering. You take the sun beating down on your jaws and the sun just beating down on you. This would have to help. Well, yeah. What do they call them? UV rays? Yeah.
This is like,
it is a protection.
What is the highest sun protection number?
Like, I don't know. The highest one that works, I think, is 50. But
that was a joke. It's the beard.
Oh, the beard.
Just
okay.
Beard.
I got you. I guess I missed
There's
that.
No number on
so, I was. So let's take a break. I got a question. So I guess at any era that security systems are important, probably more so now, crime is skyrocketing in a lot of places, unfortunately, in a lot of big cities around America. So you got to have some way to be able to protect your home. And, you know, we've always kind of had dogs and weapons in the old days. Now we realize that a good camera is really important, you know, to kind of show you what's going on outside your property. And so we got a great company, home security company, that sponsors our podcast called Simply Safe. And basically it watches your whole home for you, whether you're in it or not in it. And you can basically order online with a click of a button. You open the box, you place the sensors, you plug it in, you're good to go. So you don't have to have a technician or all these other different things like some of them have.
Well, how do they get the cameras up?
You put them up.
Oh.
Yeah, they're simple. They're easy.
They're very easy.
That's why they call it Simply Safe.
Oh, okay.
It was voted the best overall home security of 2020. So there you go. Here's how you get it. Simply Safe, SimpliSafe.com/unashamed. You get free shipping. You get a 60-day money-back guarantee just because you tell them you're unashamed. SimpliSafe.com/unashamed and start protecting your home. So, Dad, do you remember, as far as I know, we've never talked about this. Do you remember the last time you shaved your beard off completely and why? Because I remember it.
I remember.
I do not remember that.
Oh, I remember. He lost a bet.
It was a bet with Ray Melton.
This is why you shouldn't gamble.
That's right. Which is funny. We've talked about gambling.
I've never been into gambling.
Yeah, well, you bet.
Well, you did make a bet.
So here was the – I don't
– I think it was – let me just see if I get this right.
All right,
I think it was – we used to have the pastor that married me and my wife, Ray Melton.
I forgot he did your wedding.
He did.
Yeah, that's right.
And I liked
it. And this was right around that time. You've been married – is it 30 yet? 30 years?
Why are you asking me this live on a podcast?
I'm going to let
Missy know. 1990 when I got married.
That's 30 years this year. You better be doing
that's coming up.
That's coming up.
In about a month.
Yeah. You better.
I pulled a film and looked at my watch that I've never owned.
Is this a big event when you?
Oh, 30s. Yeah. That's a big one.
Well, I'll take some ideas later.
Yeah.
My life was too hectic to try to remember the day you were officially married.
Y'all had kind of a
weird. We've given you forgiveness.
That's
over
right,
that
from that era
years ago. But I think what happened was I think Phil wanted to do a neighborhood fish fry. I could be totally wrong, and he didn't think it was a lot of people going to come or something. Do I have this right?
I'm not sure about that.
I
don't remember the premise. I just remember the bet.
The bet was that the people. We're not going to show up. And Phil was saying, oh, that's not going to work. And Ray Melton said, well, I tell you what, if whatever the number was at the people coming to the fish fry to share Jesus, because we've done that many times, use the fish as the draw to share Jesus. Whatever the number was, the bet was if I think – What did he have to, I think Phil had to shave and wear a suit.
He had to shave and wear a suit, Ray's suit, and then Ray had to preach in camo.
Wear a camouflage. Because he always, you know, wore the whatever.
I now know why I don't remember that.
did it.
You did it.
You had a moment of weakness.
Of course, now this is back, just so the audience will know. So this is 30 years ago, 30 to 32 years ago when this happened. And back then, you would crop your beard up pretty short. For the summer, you know, you just had a normal little small beard. It would get longer during the winter and you would crop it. So it wasn't like it would be now if you shaved the whole thing off. So you weren't that many years removed from when, you know, you had a, you know, short beard. So you shaved it off and put a suit on. I'll never forget this. So you came, and still you had been wearing a beard for several years.
And came to the church building.
Came to church Sunday morning. Ray preached that day in camo.
Mass hysteria ensued.
It is what happened. So all these women are coming up to Dad. Now this is, you know, you're still only, you're in your 40s at this point.
This is pre-TV show.
Pre-TV show. So you still, you know, you still had the your athletic body going on. Now they saw your face. And I just remember some particular older women just fawning all over Dad. And I remember Dad looking at Mom, and we were there, and saying, I'll never do this again. And to your word, sit here today, you've never done it again. It was
crazy.
A stir. Do you remember that, Jay?
Oh, I remember
that. You and I were in school. We were in the school of preaching at that time.
Yeah, I don't remember the details. I remembered it was over how many people were going to show up, and you were wrong.
I'd forgotten that. Because the dad lost. Because
they showed up in mass. Because Ray was trying to get you to do it. He was like, and you were like, they're not going to show up to that, you know? Oh, yeah, they showed up in mass.
Well, Melton was, he was a really good storyteller, preacher.
Old Crosby, Stills, and Nash had it down. That old rock and roller group. You know, he said he sings a song. I thought about the other day, I started to shave my beard. He said, I don't know why, but it was a big deal with him. Does he shave his whiskers or not? He chose, nah, I don't guess I will. But he was thinking, if I shave my beard, I'll be mainstream, and I don't want to be there, so.
Is it weird that every other conversation we have, you find a song that I've never heard of
or a movie
in my life?
You want part of the 60s, my son.
Well, but I've, you know.
I'm glad you weren't, by the way.
Yeah,
it's hard enough to survive.
You escaped that, Jace. Where are we headed today?
That was it.
Where are we headed with the conversation? Yeah, we talked about beers. Boy, everybody loved that part.
They do love that part. They love to hear our banter. I hear from them all the time. So we had a few questions today, and I thought this was a good one that James sent us. And so we get a lot of biblical questions. So when I get one that's non-biblical, I like to share it. He said, if y'all only had one shotgun to hunt with for the rest of your lives, what kind would you pick?
Well, that's a trap question. I'll tell you this.
Who's our sponsor now on the shotgun? I don't want to stir the pot. Whoever's sponsoring
us. I don't know, but I'm going to answer truthfully and honestly after I say this.
Actually, I wanted to talk about that.
You know, what Phil was a Brownie man for years just because that's what he had. And when we started doing the Duck Commander videos, you know, the actual duck hunts. What started us to be on TV was a commercial. And
that's
right. Benelli, you know, became our sponsor. Not because we wanted to leave Browning. They said, we no longer, you know, thank you. We no longer need your services, which is kind of how it goes when you have sponsors for videos and all. So Benelli, I think it was one of the funniest moments ever because they wanted to do a commercial. Because they really liked our videos. And they said, we want to do a commercial. Would y'all do it for Benelli? And we'll give you whatever money for your to help you do your video. And look, it was not big money.
No, it wasn't back then.
Everybody's like, oh, you got Benelli.
I think we were more excited about getting the Benelli shotgun.
Oh, you're doing it to get the shotgun. Because, I mean, they're proud of it.
They have a high dollar. Yeah, high dollar. But it's a great gun.
So they all come down. This is before any of us has ever seen a TV crew or people. And so here's a small crew. Which it looked big to me back then.
It was about four or five.
Three or four people, and they got some cameras. And the guy who leaded it, who became known as the Marine, he was like getting out. They had, you know, sheets of paper and with dialogue. And Phil was just standing there. He kept saying, y'all ready? Y'all ready? And they were like, yeah, we'll be right with you, Phil. I mean, they were like, no, I think if he says this, we'll do this three times. Phil said, y'all ready? Y'all ready? And everybody kept talking, and finally,
tell them the premise.
Well, they were going to say what is the best shotgun, and they wanted him to.
They were looking at some catchy lines or phrases
to promote their.
They
best
were looking
shotgun.
For the hook. They said, "We got a hook. If he says this about it, but what? They're all arguing about what they want me to say."
That's right, and so which is what TV people do.
Oh yeah.
And Phil said, "Y'all ready? I got it." And he was like, "Well, you got what?" It was like, I got the line. You can save all that crap. And so the Marine, to his credit, which is why he became one of the producers of the show.
That's right.
He said, hey, he kind of jumped on the crew. He said, hey, turn the camera on and shut your mouths and let's hear what he's got to say. And so they turned the cameras on and Phil said, the best shotgun is one that goes boom, boom, boom. And it was like a weird silence. And then they all kind of chuckled.
Yeah.
And Phil said, that'll do it. And so, like, start getting his mic off, you know. And the Marine said, you know what? I think he's right. And when he said that, the look on the crew's faces were like, are you crazy? Are you insane?
We've set this whole thing up, brought all these people here.
But he was right. It was a great line, and they used that was the line.
Oh,
they
it
used
was their hook.
Commercial.
So what I was saying, if you analyze it, is you want it to function.
Yeah.
Right.
In boom, a creative
boom,
way.
Boom. Right. That's right. I said it in a way where they're like, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "It will fire when you pull the trigger."
Right.
Because shotguns have habits of hanging up.
Oh, yeah.
Because most people, when they do a commercial, they're like, "Hi, guys. Use this Benelli Super Black Eagle 3. It's great for functionality." Well, people, they quit listening when he went, "Hi, guys." They gone.
That's right.
They on the port. But if you can say something that makes people think that's not on the nose, which, granted, is why we started doing a TV, because the Marine, he thought, "Huh, that was kind of clever. We need to get these guys a TV show." And so that introduced Benelli Presents Duck Commander. Duck Commander.
Let's take another break.
So I went through about a 3-year period on my life where I was having this dream that I was on a pirate ship. And I would wake up, you know, every morning just surprised that I was alive.
Did you have like seasickness too? Or
no. Okay. Here's the backstory. I had bought a waterbed because I thought that might spruce up the late night activity. The problem was I woke up every day doing battle with, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Blackbeard.
Yeah, it was like it was causing too much stress. And I said, you know what? If you don't think sleeping on a bed affects your daily life, go get a waterbed for about 3 years. I mean, you're walking around.
Phil, you wake up in the middle of the night trying to fight people too, don't you?
Yeah, and I'm not on a waterbed.
Oh, boy. So I didn't know that, Jace, but it made perfect sense. That
like
our
deep confessions from my past.
That our good friends at Helix Sleep has sent you a mattress because we got to get you off the ocean. We got to get you on a bed.
You want to wake up thinking you were just sleeping in, you know, some field of daisies.
Yes.
That's right. So Jace went. So look, here's what happened. If you don't want to get on the pirate ship, you want a good mattress. HelixSleep.com/unashamed. You go to their website. You take the 2-minute sleep quiz, which you did, Jace. Mm-hmm. They have a 10, and that basically they know what you like, firm, soft, whatever. So you have a 10-year warranty. You get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. I don't even, have you had yours 100 nights, a third of a year? I don't know if you've had it that long.
I hadn't had it that long, but we're getting there.
But and it's mostly been slept on by Cole, and I asked him about it the other day, and he said he loved it. So I was like, wow, thumbs up for you.
He looked very well-rested.
He did.
Yeah. I mean, I was—
No pirates, no problem. So Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattresses ordered and 2 free pillows for our listeners if you go to helixsleep.com/unashamed. So it's helixsleep.com/unashamed. $200 off, 2 free pillows, and you won't have to fight pirates. Yeah, you're exactly right. The show, that first show we did, was born out of that commercial. But tell them about the commercial. The commercial that, I don't know if this was connected to that line, but the one where the fast food, the setup of the fast food. But
we did that. I don't think that was as successful, but we did another commercial later on. But once again, it got too set up.
Yeah.
And we were ordering a Happy Meal, and it was... It was a really weird commercial.
Well, it was like what if a fast food place sold shotguns?
Yeah,
so
that's what
it was. Premise. So you come through the drive through, and this was when Willie Boss Hall. This is where that was born out of that, because he had a big old white Cadillac with the Longhorns out of the front of it. He's in the white suit and the white hat, and y'all are all stacked in there, Godwin and y'all inside.
Yeah, we looked like Sha Na Na because it was.
But they were pretty good commercials.
Well, they were, and so they pulled up, you know. And
the one that boom, 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 though, that kind of went viral before things went viral.
Yeah, that was a little before viral.
Yeah, it was. And so to answer the question, I mean, that is the best. You know, if a gun is functional, to be honest, okay, what do you need?
That's right.
I mean, my personal favorite is this, the new Benelli Super Black Eagle 3. They basically made an improvement.
It is an outstanding shotgun.
Oh, now, look, are they proud of it? Yes, it's expensive. It costs more than my first truck.
Yeah.
Which my truck I only paid $1,000 for it, so I don't want to scare you.
I don't know.
Every time I think about Benelli and Beretta shotguns, I think of the Italians, and what can I say? Viva Italia, I guess you would say, because somewhere over there in the one of them cubby holes in Italy, there are some very shrewd gunsmiths. I'm on record as saying ever since the Roman Empire failed and all that, you know, the Italians made a comeback with shotguns and pizzas.
If I had a mic, I'd drop it.
That's how you wind up with a boom, boom, boom right there.
Yeah,
that should be the tagline of this episode. The Italians made
never
a comeback.
Rule out the Italians.
With shotguns and pizzas.
What's so funny is, you know, when back when we were doing duck hunt videos and back when I used to care about what people said on social media and the internet, you know, I would read some guy that, boy.
By the way, how long did it take you to get over that? Because I never participated in that particular conduct, listening to what somebody said on the internet and see if I'm mad or not.
Two weeks. 2 weeks. I thought, you know what? These people are.
You're a wise man. You're a wise man.
this is crap. But, I mean, I'm not going to determine my value over what somebody says or has an opinion in a virtual world that they could be anybody and they have no accountability. You know, everybody's tough when they're on a computer a million miles away. Yeah. So that's why, though, I think the internet is
solid proof that the Bible is true, because the acts of the sinful nature are obvious. In that is hatred. You see that in America, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness.
Galatians 5:22, but also I will say this, all you're doing is seeing people.
Yeah.
You're just seeing it. It was going on. You didn't have to have the internet.
Correct. Where there are people, there is simple behavior.
You're just seeing it now quickly in 1 minute. But what I was going
to
say
my question I asked me one time is why listen to it? And I decided not to listen to it.
Well, that's fine. But you are doing you are now having a conversation that's on there, and people listen to it. So the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience.
That's right. We give the other side.
But sure. I wanted to say this. A lot of people, what I would read is like, boy, Duck Commander sold out. You know, they went from Browning to Benelli. Yeah. And I'm like, what? No, they fired us. They picked our brains. They said, what do y'all think? We did a few commercials, and then they're like, thank you.
That's it.
So here comes another one.
Right.
I hope they had a little bounce in sales. Who knows?
Who knows? So Benelli comes along, and they're like, hey, guys, what do y'all think? So we're like, hey, we're in with Benelli. And like I said, mainly it was for the actual guns, which to us was priceless.
Well, to me, it's kind of like, yes, a two-phase. My nostalgia as a kid is to Browning because – we had our old Browning shotguns and still have a lot of them. You know, they're mechanized. You know, a lot of them are worn out, but they were passed down from grandpa to you, to us.
And you know what's weird, Al, is like when I go, every once in a while I go to the Vegas show where all the hunters, the SHOT show.
I haven't been to that in 20 years. How is it
when
now?
I see the people that we were with Browning, oh, hey, it's big hugs. It's not.
That's what I'm saying.
The customer loses that in that they're like, oh, it's just a business decision. We let them shoot some of our guns.
We're all friends.
It was great. And then we moved on, you know.
In fact, to tell you that it's true.
We've actually been with Benelli twice.
Right. So not too long ago, Browning has started reproducing some of the old guns that I love, the A5 and some of those, in the newer, you know, gas-operated model.
By the way, I recommended to them Browning Arms. What you just said, I said, you need to build an A5. Don't do away with the A5.
That's right.
It was all machine steel.
Right.
Well, the old tool and die people got older. Plus,
they just left those.
And it got to where it was very expensive to build.
Well, right.
So and they said, we're going to do away with it. I said, don't do that. I said, whatever you do, I said, that's your.
Well, and to show you that.
I said, you're heading in the wrong way.
Well, they made a replica of it.
Build an A5-like shotgun instead of the barrel recoil. I said, have your spring back in the stock, like Benelli and all of them. I said, put your spring back in the back. you know, I done forgot the first guy's name, Mr. Browning, but he figured out that barrel recoil. But
yeah.
I told him, I said, put your spring in the back like Benelli and them do. I said, but at least make it look like an old A5, I said, and you'll do a lot better.
Well,
a decade went by, and they didn't take me up on it. But after about a decade, somebody must have stood up one time and said, I think maybe that old boy had something there.
No, he just waited for them to forget.
They built an A5.
It was his idea, that's right.
Then they sent me one of them down here.
Well, no, that's what I was going to tell. So I run across one of the guys that we used to do business with, and I had seen the shotgun. I said, man, I'm so excited. That's my all-time favorite gun. It's my original A5.
Yep.
And he was like, well, let me send you a few. And I was like, yeah, well, sure. You know, I mean, he knew we were with Benelli. So he sent me a handful of them, and that's why we have one. But it's – so there's a great relationship. But Benelli is kind of the new one because we've been using theirs. And there's,
They're good guns. They're both good guns.
I still like the M2 is my favorite out of
those. Yeah, I have
an
M2.
It's a so really,
we're,
really
we're good all gun. Happy. So I hope that answered your question.
So that – and by the way, somebody else asked, we usually use 12 gauges. Si uses a 20. Somebody asked me what gauge shotgun.
I mean, we have different – I have every gauge.
Yeah, but you mostly shoot a 12.
Yeah, I do. But I mean
– what about the year you shot the 10 gauge off?
I got off the 10 gauge due to injuries. I mean, that thing –
stomp a mud hole in
it. They probably come up with a way for it not to kick so hard. But I'm going to tell you, that's literally like getting hit by Tyson – 25 times a day. Yeah, if you shoot them, I mean,
your shoulder is blue the next day. You can say,
well, it's just kawam, and then you got to gather yourself.
Yeah,
kawam, gather yourself.
We opted to be better at duck calling, call them in closer.
Yeah, Si's shooting a 28 gauge now, which is basically a pop gun, but he claims he kills everything.
Yeah, letting him do something, feel like he's involved.
You got to remember, a whole DVD was devoted to Si, the art of claiming ducks.
That's right. He's alone on the title. That's an interesting one. All right, let's take another break. So a lot of people have been working from home. Our guys did, Zach, for our production company. Everybody was kind of
– Still are.
Still are. So and fortunately, it's something you can do a lot of times with your job. It involves computer. Unfortunately, one of the things that's happened that kind of driving up, the more people that are out there on the internet, the more stuff that's going online, is that there's some cyber crime that's spiking as well.
No, in our world.
Always the bad guys.
Mischief on the internet,
bad
Phil.
Guys on the internet, Dad.
Those trying to steal your house.
We're good guys, but they're bad guys. So home title theft is what we're talking about. Basically, they target people's homes. Because if your home title is typically somewhere in the cyber world, or as Dad would say, computer land. And so a lot of times it's unprotected. And these guys find their way to do it. They put their name on it or borrow money against it. And all of a sudden some person, they show up at somebody's house and they evict them. It's happened to people, which is really sad and scary. So home title lock puts a virtual barrier around your home's title. That's what we want. So you protect your home. You can go to HomeTitleLock.com. You register your address. You got to make sure that you still have your home. Use the code PHIL, and you get 30 days of free protection to help you through the crisis. So that's code PHIL at HomeTitleLock.com. All right, so here's the next question I had. We'll save this other one because it's a little more in-depth. But I thought this was interesting. I don't remember who sent it, but – someone asked me, why would Joshua clear the promised land of all the, you know, heathens, in quote, you know, all the people that were there, if the people were going to come in and, you know, the Israelites would come in and then they would all wind up doing the same thing? Why would God just clear out the other ones if they're going to come in and turn out doing the exact same thing?
I feel like I've just sat down to the middle of a story. I'm not even familiar with this story.
Well, so. Let me set it up. So this is what I told. I actually responded to him. But so this is – so God promised the land of Canaan to Abraham. He was like, you know, this is the land I'm going to give you. And so you remember Abraham leaves in Genesis 12, and so he starts on his trek. Well, he never – you know, they were still warring around. You know, it wasn't all under control until way after the Israelites came out. So this is like 400 years later. And so Joshua gets there with the second generation of slaves because all the others died out in the desert. and basically started at Jericho and just went through and toppled the whole country. But God gave it to him. He said, clear them out. Don't leave any of them there. I don't want any false gods left in here. You clean everything out. Everybody that's in there, it needs to be gone. And
so what's his question?
So his question is, but then, so what happens is they get in there. Everything's starting out great. Everybody loves Joshua, loves God. And then we just go about three or four generations, and they become the people that were there. They started following, you know, the Baals and all the different deals. So they
sounds like a democratic republic once upon exactly a time right. that is not but 244 years old. And for some strange reason, they've deserted God.
That's right. And decide that communism is a good
Your story is a perfect example exactly. of what men do, including now.
So it's but I always view it from a macro. I mean, I'm like, no matter what happened in the Old Testament, there's a need for Jesus to offer redemption and resurrection.
Well, yeah.
Well, the answer to the question is, but it's a good question in the sense of, you know, it has implications. But you got to look at it like this. When you try to look at it and say, why would God do this? Immediately, you're entering waters that are not good for human beings.
You can never figure out,
you know what I'm saying?
Because each human still has the ability to choose
exactly.
God
it.
Or not.
That's exactly mm-hmm. right. So from
God knows that. Somebody said, well, why did he do it if he knew they were going to sin? I mean, if he knew they were going to rebel again. Have there ever been a group of human beings who didn't start sinning?
Well, you remember we had rebelling? A question a few podcasts ago where it says, why would God even make us if he knew we were going to sin? So it's the same concept. You can't put yourself in God's place to try to figure something like that out.
The hall of faith, as you notice in the book of Hebrews, Al, it's not a very long read.
it's one chapter.
You know what I'm trying to say?
That's right. Yeah,
the list was not lengthy.
But they had it more difficult than we do because they had no grace and they had no resurrection. They were just having to deduct all this. I mean, trust me, if I'd have been in the Old Testament, I'd probably been out too.
Well,
because you're like, do what now?
Do you remember we talked
about?
Well,
you have spoken the truth, my son, because everyone who is under the law is under a curse.
Yeah.
You're like, it's tough when you're going with the law.
Can you imagine being in a civilization where there's absolutely no hope?
Violation condemns.
Yeah, well, you just summed up what non-believers think.
Right.
Because it's hopeless. I mean, we've figured this out. You know, someone shared it with us, and we're like, oh, I don't have to be miserable. I actually can have a purpose. I know where I came from. I know what my purpose is, and I for sure know where I'm headed.
Right.
But people without that, they're just trying to figure out if there's a God, and if there is, what is his plan here? Because that's why they come up with the same question. Well, how come all this bad stuff's going on if there's a God?
Yeah.
Which is basically where this kind of question is coming from, because it's not making sense.
But you got to understand, there's two simple answers. One is God made a promise to Abraham this was going to happen. So that's the first reason it happened. One thing you can count on God, when there's a promise made in the scriptures, it's going to happen.
That is
correct. We talked about that on a previous one, because that doesn't seem like a big deal to us. But if you think about eternity, you can't have a being who says, okay, if you know, I'm going to come down there, die for you, save you, and I'm going to save you forever. You can't have a being who is capable of going back on his word, because we're talking about eternity here. Because most people tend to think, well, we get up there for a few thousand years, and then this all starts again. Because, you know, he changes his mind. That's just the way we think, because we can't relate to eternity.
That's right.
So we start saying, well, why did he do that?
Our final word on everything. We find that difficult. Humans don't like the final word.
So he made a point that when I say something, it is impossible for that not to be true. Now, you may not see it or understand it, but it's impossible for it not to be true.
And it may be generations before you see it. The other point I would make to this is, and as one who studied the Old Testament extensively, is that even throughout that era, the Judges, which is right after that, and it was bad. I mean, there was a lot of lawlessness. You go all the way through Israel's history, one principle is always there. and it actually started back in Noah. There's always a remnant of the godly. No matter how bad the society gets, no matter how much stuff there's.
That is,
you know,
true.
Because you remember Elijah got to the point where he was like, I'm the only one left. And so you might as well just take me because we're done here. And then you remember what he told him. He's like, no, I still got 7,000. But think about that, out of a whole nation. That wasn't many. He said, I still got 7,000 waiting on you.
That's why I've been saying here lately, everybody needs to remember, I'm guessing it at 1 million, give or take a few, who are in the streets with all this nonsense and all this vile filth and sinful behavior. But that leaves, there's roughly 325 million of us, whatever that number is, but that leaves 324 million.
Right.
What's their thinking? When they're viewing what we're all viewing in modern day, all this protesting and riots and fires and burning and murders, you're like, what in the world? You would tend to say the whole thing is collapsing. But you need to remember there's 324 million that are watching the million, and they have a decision to make. Do I join that, or do I steer clear of that, live by faith? I know this. This is Galatians 3, verse 10. That's everybody, all who rely on observing the law are under a curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone. Here's all you have to do, ladies and gentlemen. Cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. All you have to do is be sin-free. Never make a mistake, and you're good. If not, one little mistake, you're under a curse. Death, death. In that context, when Jesus shows up and says, I will deliver you and nail the law to the cross, what's amazing is there are a lot of people out there now that are still saying, we're under the law of Moses.
Right.
That's the last place you want to be. That's you right. Just don't want to be there.
Well, let's take one last break. That was actually the last question was about that, Dad. The question was from Zacharias, in Matthew 5, when Jesus said, do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets, I've come not come to abolish, but to fulfill them.
Yep.
That what did he mean by that? Because it sounds like, from his perspective, it sounds like that the law is good. Jesus didn't say, you know, I came here to abolish it, to fulfill it. So does law continue on into Christianity? So that's kind of the, you know, he has several questions underneath it, but that's kind of his gist. So how did Christ fulfill the law?
He did something that the human race has never done. He kept it.
Right.
He kept it, which meant he loved perfectly, never makes a mistake, turns around and dies. Before this faith came, that's Jesus and his death, burial, and resurrection, we were held prisoners by the law. I'm quoting Galatians 3, verse 23, ladies and gentlemen. Locked up until faith should be revealed. Who's going to deliver us from the law that we never kept? So the law was put in charge, here's the purpose, to lead us to Christ, that we might be justified by faith. Now that faith has come, we are no longer under the supervision of the law. I don't know how much clearer you can make it, Al.
Well, because the point is, it's not Paul said the law is good and holy. There's nothing wrong with the law. What was wrong was we couldn't keep the law.
That is it.
So the failure was not in the standard. The failure is in the people. So that sometimes people misunderstand that, because it sounds like you're saying law is bad. No, Paul said law is good. Law is holy.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with the law because God came up with it.
I think what people are missing is that in what we say about the law, we're not under law. He canceled the code.
He nailed it to the cross.
Nailed it to the cross. So somebody reads, well, he fulfilled it. What does that mean? What you got to remember is when we talk about we're not under law, well, yeah, we're under laws, but we're not under law as the motivation for why we do what we do. You know, when you quote Romans 12, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as living sacrifices. So I think that's a factor in this, is that, okay, you can make a point about the law is still here because people are breaking it.
Right.
And because people say, well, he didn't. How can there not be a law if people are still breaking it? So technically, oh, yeah, people are living under law. Look, I'll tell you this right now. There's a lot of church buildings that they're living under law. That's obvious. Because you break one of the rules and you'll find yourself in a closed door meeting being tongue lashed. So I've heard.
Yep.
And so I think that's the one thing is that it's not that won't. The reason you read that if you only break one of them, then you're guilty of breaking all of it is if you try to live your life trying to keep the law as a basis for righteousness.
Or even a few of them. Yeah.
You're going to be disappointed. That's why you're disappointed. And so you say, you know what? I'm going to love Jesus because he fulfilled the law, which is all that means is he kept it and died for those who didn't.
That's it.
There's the fulfillment. So you say, well, why do I go technically keep the law? Because I love Jesus.
Right.
I mean, there's some things that are right and wrong, and I'm doing the ones that are right only because I love Jesus.
Therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Because through Christ Jesus, the law of the Spirit of life, it dispenses justice, but it's through your faith in Jesus, as the old Jace is saying. The law of the Spirit of life set me free from the law of sin and death. What the law was powerless to do, in that it was weakened by the sinful nature. You're right, Al. Nothing wrong with the code.
No, the code's fine.
But there's a whole lot of wrong with us.
Right.
So it was weakened by the sinful nature. Here's what God did. God did by sending his own son in the likeness of sinful man. Look, he was a human. So you're like, well, how'd he do with the law? He kept it.
Yeah.
He kept it, every jot and tittle. The likeness is of it to be a sin offering, Jesus. And so he condemned sin and sinful man in order that the righteous requirements of the law, which is 100% flawless obedience, might be fully met in us because he kept it. It is met in us through our faith in him. It's given to us. It was a wonderful thing that God did through Jesus Christ regarding the law. Because we don't live according to the sinful nature, but according to the Spirit. We simply trust God and try, and you say, well, how will I know the results of people who are not under the law? How would I spot them? See if they love, see if they're full of joy, see if they bring peace, love, joy, peace, patient, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. You said those are the ones who live by the Spirit right there.
I want to say this. I know we got to go, but you know, that question came from the Sermon on the Mount. And I think the biggest yawner class I ever did was what I'm fixed to share with you in less than a minute because people thought, what?
They yawned on you, Jace?
Didn't get it. Because I went to the Sermon on the Mount to try to share with them that we're not under law. Well, they're like, and he goes through all these situations. You say you're not an adulterer, but I tell you, you can't even think about, you know, a woman in that way. They're like, well, that seems contrary. And my point was that Jesus' whole point was you're not going to keep the law. Because even if you think you do, I know what's going on in secret, and you're not keeping the law. So he comes down to the last verse in chapter 5, and it says, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. It's a really controversial verse because nobody in the religious world wants to tackle that. They're like, be perfect, do that. Well, we can't do that. But they're missing the point that it's as your heavenly Father. He was introducing this idea of a relationship.
That's right.
He was getting off the law onto, as you look at the Father, that's your motivation. Because trust me, you're not going to be perfect. But some of these people, they're like, no, it says be perfect. Well, if it says that, we're all screwed.
Yep.
Because that ain't going to happen. And so then people are like, oh, and then he spends the next chapter talking about, I see what's going on in secret, which the point is, he knows your heart.
Right.
And if you're trying to take a code and implement it in your life and be good, you're going to be very disappointed, and you're probably not going to make it.
Yep. Which, to prove that point, Paul said in 2 Corinthians 12, in my weakness is when I'm made perfect. Remember when he said that, talking about himself?
Another thing that makes no sense.
That's right.
To the legalistic mind.
Right, because he was saying, and look, he was the legalist of legalists.
But the bottom line is, it's not about you, it's about Jesus. And don't fret if you're sincerely mistaken. That's why I told you the story. I was 10 feet from my brother, and I'd have bet $10,000 that it wasn't him. Guess what?
And so that was his son and didn't know it.
We were wrong. So when you hear these
it happens.
Hear these types of things, say, maybe I need to get off the code and get more on Jesus.
Yeah.
I like it. Thanks for the questions. Keep them coming.
So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.